advertisement. The court will proceed to the third case, Central States versus FenCorp. Mr. Francis.
May it please the court, counsel. Your Honors, in this case, the district court dismissed Central States' claim against FenCorp Reinsurance Company on the ground that it lacked personal jurisdiction over the defendant. However, in making this ruling, the district court made two errors that warrant reversal. First, in analyzing whether the court had personal jurisdiction over the defendant, the court only focused on specific, not general, jurisdiction. As a result, the court only focused upon FenCorp's contacts related to the claim at issue rather than FenCorp's overall contacts with the United States. The second error committed by the district courts, Your Honors, is that the district court failed to grant discovery before resolving the personal jurisdiction issue. In denying discovery, the district court made errors of both law and fact. As to fact, the district court erroneously stated that the evidence only showed FenCorp's contacts with its parent company, when in fact there were numerous pieces of evidence independent of FenCorp's relationship with its parent. As to law, the district court erred by holding that the discovery would only be relevant if it demonstrated contacts related to the withdrawal liability claim, and that tied back to the court's original error in only focusing on specific, not general, jurisdiction. Turning first to the issue of the general personal jurisdiction issue, Your Honors, both the Supreme Court and this court have held that jurisdiction can exist where the defendant can be shown to have purposely availed himself of the privilege of conducting activities within the forum. And here the appropriate forum to analyze is the United States as a whole, because as both ERISA and this court recognize, ERISA provides for nationwide service of process, and therefore, as long as the defendant has contacts anywhere within the United States sufficient to support personal jurisdiction, then the Northern District of Illinois would have had jurisdiction in this case. In finding that no personal jurisdiction existed, the district court stated that none of the business transactions gave rise to this case and further elaborated, and I'm quoting here, that FenCorp's provision of insurance and reinsurance coverage to United States companies had nothing to do with the claim. And as a result, the court concluded that no personal jurisdiction existed. However, as the Supreme Court and this court have recognized, general personal jurisdiction does not require a relationship between the claim that has been raised in the case and the contacts. All that is necessary is to show that the contacts were continuous and systematic. And when all of the contacts here were analyzed, if all the contacts had been analyzed, it's clear that the contacts were continuous and systematic. FenCorp acknowledged in their own affidavit that they issued 5 insurance policies to companies within the United States, and those policies ran over years and years and years. And although FenCorp would like the court to believe that the only activity would be the mere issuance of the policy, that really belies common sense. 2 of the policies were workers' compensation policies. There were automobile and general liability policies. Certainly, they had to rate the risks of the insurance. They had to maintain contact to see with the parties they've insured. Certainly, claims were filed and had to be adjudicated. All of that was just from a common sense reading of what FenCorp did, and this is the activity that they've admitted in the United States. Now, FenCorp obviously argues, well, all we did was issue the policy, but there's really nothing in the record that supports the assertion that all that was done was merely issue the policies. Further, Your Honors, FenCorp elected to be treated as a United States corporation for tax purposes, although FenCorp argues that...
You know, that tax return issue, I fear, well, for me at any rate, is truly neither here nor near. Here or there. For one thing, the tax returns are from 2001 and 2002. The case was filed in 2005. Jurisdiction, of course, is determined at the time that a complaint is filed. For another, FenCorp claims that the tax return was filed by FenCorp's American parent corporation, not by FenCorp itself. You know, the insurance policies had expired by the date that the complaint was filed, so FENCOR has had no ongoing business contacts by that date.
And then the tax form had just the first page, as I understand it.
Yeah.
The tax form was incomplete.
Well, that's correct, Your Honor. Unfortunately,
in addition to the things that Judge Rovner outlined.
Well, I'll take those in reverse order. First, your question, Your Honor. Obviously, Central States was not allowed discovery. It's true that the return is filed by the parent corporation, but the election is FENCORP's. Whether FENCORP delegates that election to their parent or not, it's still the election of FENCORP. And turning to Judge Rovner's questions or statements, while it's true that jurisdiction may be determined at the time that the complaint is filed, Central States does not interpret that to mean that you only focus on the conduct at the exact moment that the complaint was filed. And we have to remember that the claim at issue in this case actually arose back in November of 2003 when the complete withdrawal occurred, and there was at least one policy, which was an excess directors and officers liability policy, that was in force at that time. I don't think it's true to say that if a company, I imagine this hypothetical, imagine that an accident occurs and a company realizes that the claim would be crippling and simply decides that it would cease operations rather than face the risk of being subject to jurisdiction. Well, unless the complaint was filed right away, that would mean that if the complaint was filed a year later but well within the statute of limitations, the company wouldn't have personal jurisdiction. I think you have to look at their contacts as a whole.
Am I wrong in believing that continuous and systematic contacts are needed for general jurisdiction?
No, that's correct, Your Honor. But here,
what is continuous and systematic about five insurance policies in seven years? I mean, you compared yourself to that Newman case, and in that case, you had a sales representative making 26 to 34 sales visits over the course of 4 years. That's continual business activity, seems to me.
Well, Your Honor, if State Farm issues automobile insurance policies, let's say, to 10 corporations, and those corporations, let's say, have 10,000 employees, aren't there going to be a lot of accidents and a lot of claims and a lot of work? I mean, this ties to the whole discovery, the denial of discovery, Your Honor, that, we're assuming that only insurance policies are issued and that's it. I mean, first of all, those policies were continuously in force from at least back in 95 forward. There was at least always, there was at least one, if not more, policies in force. Secondly, it defies common sense to believe that all that happened was the policy was issued. There were no claims filed, no premiums collected. The terms of the policies weren't negotiated. We just don't know. And the fact that the district court denied discovery on that issue means we won't ever be able to know. But I think as a matter of common sense, the fact that the policies were in force meant that there had to be more contact than just the mere fact that they were in force. Unless there are questions, I'll reserve my time for rebuttal.
All right, very good. Thank you, Mr. Francis. Mr. Paycheck?
Good morning, Your Honor. Christopher Page on behalf of FENCORP. The district court did not err when it dismissed FENCORP from the case under Rule 12b-2, and it likewise did not err when it denied Central States the opportunity to take discovery. First, on the jurisdictional aspect, recall that the district court dismissed the case because each of the grounds was lacking for exercise of jurisdiction. There had been no proper service of process, and there were insufficient contacts to support the exercise of federal jurisdiction. Now, that improper service of process was not contested by Central States below. In fact, Central States acknowledged it by requesting more time to serve, a request the district court denied. Neither of those holdings are part of this appeal. So, again, as I set forth in my brief, I believe that that disposes of this matter in and of itself.
Well, let me ask you in terms of the whole, all those insurance policies, what services For example, customer support or billing or additional sales visits did FinCorp provide to its customers when it provided the insurance and reinsurance policies to the five American companies from 1995 through April of 2003?
And that's a very good question.
And, you know, how much contact did the representatives have with these companies during the time?
Well, what the record shows on that aspect is what was in the declarations of Philip Young, an original and a supplemental declaration. And those policies were not in the main of direct policies that a consumer might get from, for example, an automobile insurer, as Mr. Franzig mentioned in his argument. Rather, they were all reinsurance or excess claims. In other words, that it's quite possible that those policies might never result in claims because they would only come into play if the risk were above and beyond what the consumer directly had obtained. And so I think that in that regard, when you're talking about an insurer who is a reinsurer or an excess claims insurer only, you're talking about a party at a far greater remove from the source than a direct insurer.
Well, wouldn't discovery, though, put that issue to rest? I mean, you wouldn't want a general rule just because it's a reinsurer or an excess insurer that person would never be subject to any inquiry as to activities simply because they're a little further down the timeline normally in a claim situation.
And I understand your point, Your Honor, except that in the district court level, that threshold of discovery is not crossed unless first the plaintiff makes the showing. It's the plaintiff's burden under Rule 12b-2 to establish a colorable or prima facie basis for the exercise of jurisdiction. And in this case, that burden was not carried. There, again, was no service of process, and the district court determined that there were no jurisdictional contexts, sufficient context to support jurisdiction, even if there were discovery. And as this court mentioned in Central States, the first Central States case versus Reimer, that notion of whether to engage in discovery is a particularly cautious step to take for a court, particularly when we're dealing with a foreign company, as they were in Central States versus Reimer Express case, and as also we're talking about here in this case with an entity based in Barbados. So I understand the supposition and the might be, could be, would be, and that's much of what Central States argues. There might have been solicitation, there could have been further negotiation, there might have been something else, but in fact what we are dealing with here is the record, and the burden to have made those showings was Central States showing they did not make.
Can you point to anything in the record to indicate that the judge considered both aspects of jurisdiction?
Yes. In fact, I believe at the sixth page of the judge's order of February 3rd, she speaks in terms of general jurisdiction in that Central States' argument cannot carry to link FinCorp to the United States solely through its corporate affiliation with PSC. Now, I will grant you that the judge in the district court case talks only of sufficient contacts and does not expressly break them out into general and specific jurisdiction. That's for sure. But I think that's the district judge there was following the language of this court in the Welts case, which talked about sufficient contacts. As I read the district court's opinion, particularly pages 5 through 8, the district court talks about the general contacts through its affiliation, FinCorp's affiliation with its parent, PSC, but then also the specific contacts, that is those five transactions, the five excess and reinsurance policies we've been discussing this morning. So in my view, yes, the court clearly considered them both under the general heading of sufficient contacts, and again, perhaps for clarity's sake, it would have been best had the words general and specific jurisdiction been there, but I think we are only talking about general jurisdiction in this case, because Central States has said several points up through their reply brief that they never made an argument about specific jurisdiction, that they don't argue that any of those five distinct transactions have anything to do with the substance of this complaint.
Of course, Wild dealt with diversity.
That's correct.
Yeah, I mean, a little different, but I mean, I understand.
Right. What I did want to speak about for a moment was the notion that appeared for the first time in Central States' reply brief that the case should be remanded so that Central States can have an attempt at achieving foreign service. I do not think that would be the right result here. As we spoke about earlier, they raised that issue with the district court. The district court rejected the issue. Central States did not pursue that issue on appeal. It raised it for the first time on reply, which, as we all know, is a waiver of that issue for purposes of appeal. That issue, that boat has sailed. But moreover, even digging into the substance of that inquiry, this court in the O'Rourke case of a few years ago departed from the notion that time for foreign service is unlimited. So under Rule 4M, that there's that 120-day rule that specifically exempts service upon foreign corporations, as we have here, or foreign states, which we do not. But and then the case from last year in the Nylock Corporation, this court revisited that issue at greater length. In that case in particular is 396 Federal 3rd at 805, in particular 807. And it talks about the district courts having the inherent authority to dismiss for want of service, even if there is no express time limit in Rule 4M, and gave some indications about what might be entailed in such a decision. For example, in the Nylock case, more time was allowed, but the record in that case, including affidavits and the like, which are not present here, talked about the extended lengths of time that it would take to achieve service in that case, Taiwan or Korea, 4 months or 12 months, respectively, up to 12 months. We have nothing like that here. That record also showed that the party in that case requesting more time had actually done things to try and obtain service on the foreign company, but hadn't been able to through events out of its control. There's nothing in the record about that here. Also in the Nylock case, this court surmised that if there had been no action taken within 120 days, that might well be something that would support dismissal for failure to serve. And the timeline in this case shows that, again, nothing happened with regard to foreign service in the record, and more than 120 days passed from filing of the complaint in August of 04 through the district court's decision in February of 05, and no steps were taken towards foreign service. So I would say that even if this court did not consider that issue to be waived and dug into the merits of it, that another bite of the apple is not appropriate here. And moving on then to the general jurisdiction issue, I think that Judge Rovner was right earlier that the general jurisdiction standard, as this court has articulated, particularly in the Purdue Research case, is considerably more stringent than that of specific jurisdiction, which makes sense. Specific jurisdiction is jurisdiction that arises from the complaint of events in the forum. In this case, again, there's no hint, there's no suggestion that any of the contacts that FenCorp had with the United States are in any way related to this case. So what's required for general jurisdiction is to show that continuous, systematic, pervasive presence in the forum that's akin essentially to a physical presence here to make FenCorp amenable to suit in the United States for any claim on any basis arising anywhere. And I submit that the district court had it right that we have far, far short of that type of presence. What the record shows in terms of FenCorp's contacts is extremely limited. Those five insurance policies, all of which expired prior to the filing of the complaint. We have the declaration of Philip Young, unrebutted below, that talks about never having owned real estate, never having had offices in the United States, never having had employees in the United States, not even having an internet site with passive contact with the United States, and not even being referenced in the internet site of its parent company, PSC, here in the U.S.
Is there any indication in the record how the those contracts that expired, Mr. Page, were negotiated? Or?
There is nothing. There is nothing in the record. Simply that the FenCorp's records show that those five clients with policies for those times.
What's the status of the bankruptcy petition?
I'm afraid I don't know exactly the status of the bankruptcy petition. I believe that the PSC has emerged from bankruptcy, but I'm afraid I can't say that authoritatively. On the aspect of the record, again, it was Central States' burden below to make a showing that would entitle further inquiry into something like that. They did not make it. But more to the point, remember that Central States is resting its entire case on the notion that FenCorp was generally, continuously, pervasively present in the United States. Were that the case, I believe that Central States certainly would have been able to come up with something at the motion practice stage, a declaration, an affidavit, something other than that tax form we discussed earlier, to show that, in fact, FenCorp was doing business here on a general and continuous basis. They didn't. On that record, it was correct both to dismiss FenCorp from the case and to decline to permit discovery, which would have been fruitless. That's
Thank
all my time.
Page.
Thank you.
Ms. Franchek.
Just to clear up a few points, the district court did not consider the general
jurisdiction issue. What the district court said, I'm quoting here, is nor can Central States demonstrate sufficient contacts based on FenCorp's business dealings. The complaint alleges sufficient contacts exist because FenCorp does business in the United States. However, none of the identified business transactions gave rise to the case.
So
jurisdiction.
Are you arguing that Judge Conlon didn't address the issue of sufficiency of service?
No, Your Honor, we're not. Okay. But the sufficiency of service is something that is a curable defect and wouldn't support jurisdiction. I mean, Judge Conlon, contrary to the implication of the appellee's argument, Judge Conlon never ruled on the merits of the extension of time to serve. What Judge Conlon said is, I'm denying it as moot because I'm finding there's no personal jurisdiction on the merits, which presents a real conundrum. I don't think Judge Conlon would have well received our attempt to effectuate service and then come back to the court and say, and the judge would say, well, why are you here? I've told you you don't get personal jurisdiction regardless of whether you serve process properly. It's also untrue to say that Central States didn't take any steps. I mean, Central States asked for an extension of time, and in the extension of time, Central States explained the grounds and the steps it had taken. The court never addressed that because it had ruled on the other issue, so that it was essentially pointless. If the court were to affirm just on the ground of improper service, I mean, Central States could go out because it was a dismissal without prejudice, file a new complaint, effectuate service, and then the district court's going to say, why the heck are you back here again? I've told you I don't have personal jurisdiction over this case. Dismiss it again, and we'll come back. The appellees acknowledge that that's not what they want, but I don't think they can have it both ways on that issue. Also, as to the question about the status of the bank, your Honor's question about the bankruptcy, a plan was confirmed in the bankruptcy, and the parent has emerged. Pennies on the dollar were paid on the claim, so this is a very real and live million-dollar issue before the court. I see my time is up, if I could briefly conclude.
Of course.
Thank you, Your Honor. In this case, we're not dealing with a situation like Reamer, where you had a Canadian corporation that actually operated and did a lot in Canada and then had tangential contacts with the United States. Here, what we have is a corporation that's incorporated in Barbados, and for all we know, all it has is an office in Barbados, and all its activity is in the United States. And the district court erred in this case by applying the wrong standard for general jurisdiction and in denying discovery when discovery would have revealed FenCorp's contacts with the United States. Thank you, Your Honors.
Our thanks to all counsel.
Thank you.
The case is taken under advisement.